Welcome to the Soap video series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We're working our way through the book of 1 Samuel, and we've come to the third week or the third session.
Yeah.
We've been through the first eight chapters already,
yep.
And so we're picking up this week in chapter 9. We'll go through chapter 13.
Yeah.
And things are moving along.
Things are moving along a lot. So last week, a lot of action,
yeah.
Right? So we had the Ark of the Covenant, and it actually got captured,
yeah.
By the Philistines, and they ended up giving it back.
Yeah.
And
not without some problems, though.
yeah, just a little
just
bit.
Just a few.
But Samuel is now old, and his kids are corrupt. So the idea is, we want a king.
Yeah.
You know, let's put a king in. And it's really a slap in God's face.
Yeah.
Because I think you mentioned like three things last week. You know, a king is going to lead us into battle.
Yep.
A king will have somebody to go to for our troubles.
Yep. And judge us, lead us, and fight our battles, is
yeah.
what they said at the end of chapter 8.
And God's like, that's what
that's
I said.
My job.
I would do.
That's my yeah. job description. That's what I said.
Yeah. Yeah. So God sends out Samuel, and Samuel understands that God's not happy, but to let it happen.
Yeah.
And that's Samuel's marching orders.
Yeah.
So that was last week. So now we start with Samuel's got a job.
Yep.
He's got to find a king.
Yeah. But God's already picked him.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going with. Yeah. So God's already picked him and decided. And we get a description of the guy, right? And his name is Saul. And it turns out, good-looking guy.
Good-looking guy, yeah.
Head and shoulders taller than everyone else. And he comes from the tribe of Benjamin, or Benjamite,
yep.
Which is the smallest tribe.
Yep.
So nobody would have thought that was going to happen, but
right.
It is a prominent family that he's part of.
Which is funny, because he'll describe himself as from the least family of the least tribe, which is how Gideon described himself. And fun fact, there is another Saul in the Bible, in the New Testament,
right.
Who's also from the tribe of Benjamin.
Is he?
Yeah, I didn't realize that. He was nice. Very likely, you know, named after King Saul here 1,000 years earlier.
Yeah.
So, nice. Saul, we know him better as Paul, of course. But, yeah, he was Saul
right.
from the tribe of Benjamin.
Right. So, Saul doesn't know he's going to be king. what he does know is his dad has lost some donkeys, and he and the servant are tasked to go find the donkeys.
Yeah.
I don't know if we know how many donkeys are actually lost.
I don't think so.
And
says the donkeys, yeah.
Saul takes a really long trip, actually, to find some donkeys. So either there was a lot of donkeys, or the donkeys were worth a lot. One of the two.
Yeah. Or they took a long trip, or they hid well, or something. Because
yeah,
Saul
yeah.
takes this circuitous
so
route.
Yeah, Saul's going around the countryside. I'm sure it made sense. He might have been happy to be out.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, right.
But they ended up in the town, and the servant said, hey, there's a seer in this town.
Yeah.
And I happen to have a little silver in my pocket. Why don't we give it to the seer and see what he says?
Yeah, see if he can find these donkeys.
Yeah, because we're not finding these donkeys.
Yeah. And the word seer, it's not a word we use very often anymore, but, I mean, literally, it is one who sees, a seer. Right,
yeah.
It's an old word for prophet, and in fact, in the text, Samuel or whoever wrote it for us actually tells us that. Right, it's just
yeah.
an old word for prophet. So
yeah, so they get into a town. They're trying to find where the seer is, and Saul stops and asks some ladies, some girls, for directions.
Yeah.
Now, some people make a big deal out of this. Saul, the future king, is talking to a woman.
Yeah.
Not a big deal.
Now we yeah. think, you know, when we think Middle East today. We
yeah.
think, you know, masculine and feminine and, you know, this big yeah. oppression, you can't talk to them. That was not the case in at least Israel. In fact, under the Mosaic Law, one of the big things that people miss about the Mosaic Law is how much it did elevate women. They were not oppressed. They were not pushed down like a lot of people like to accuse
right.
Israel of doing, or the law. So this was not a problem at all. Abraham's servant, when he went looking for a wife for Isaac, he talked to a woman at a well. Jesus talked to him. Now,
right.
Jesus was a Samaritan. That was sort of an issue. Jacob talked to women. I mean, it's...
Right. Well, there's a woman judge. There's
Yeah, Deborah. You know, there's... Yeah, it's not as big yeah. of a deal as some people make
okay.
it out to be. Yeah.
All right. So Saul meets the seer. It doesn't realize it's Samuel. And God had told Samuel exactly what to expect, right?
Right. There's this guy coming to see you looking for
yeah.
donkeys.
Well, he is going to be the leader of my people, and he's going to save my people from the Philistines.
Yeah.
And two pretty big jobs there.
Yep.
So they have lunch. And they have lunch with a bunch of people. And Saul, I think, is kind of I'm just looking for donkeys. I'm
looking for my donkeys. Yeah.
Looking around. Why am I getting all this meat?
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because there's this whole thing around it, and Samuel talks to the cook. He's like, "You remember that piece that I had you set aside? Now's the time to bring it up. Give it to him."
Right.
It's a great movie. I see it in my head.
Yeah, it is. But Samuel does tell Saul enough to keep him interested.
Yeah.
Look, your donkeys have been found.
Yeah.
Okay, I just gotta, and I get lunch. Okay, so we'll see what happens.
How do you know that? I'm the seer. Yep. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Right, so Samuel gets Saul alone, and he pours some olive oil on his head, yep. And he kisses him. So there's an anointment that has happened here. There's an
official something going on, yeah.
And the Lord has chosen you to lead his people.
Yep.
Now, this is just between those two, right? Not between everybody at this time.
Right, so this is the next day, actually. So we're in chapter 10 now, and this is the next day. And in fact, Samuel tells Saul, "Send your servant on ahead. I need to have a private conversation with you."
So just these two guys and God.
Well, of course, yeah.
And then to prove it's a message from God, Samuel tells him, here's what the rest of your day is going to look like.
Literally. And there, I mean, like some amazing detail.
Yeah. Yeah. And it happens.
And it which is great because we go back 2 weeks ago and we ended chapter 3 with nothing that came out of Samuel's mouth fell to the ground unfulfilled, right? So this is just yet another piece of Samuel's ongoing prophecy.
Right, so he goes through everything, and like you said, he's specific. And at the end, he says, "Now then, I want you to go to a specific town, and I want you to wait for me. I'll be there in 7 days."
Yeah.
And that's kind of, and then they part. Saul turns to leave. And verse 9 says, God changed his innermost person.
Yeah.
So what's going on here?
So it's really, the phrase there in Hebrew says that God turned for him a different heart. God turned for him a different heart. So different translations handle it differently, but God did something in his heart. He changed him in some way. The Holy Spirit did come on him. Now, this is not permanent. The Holy Spirit still comes and goes. And the way Saul acts moving forward, I would be real hesitant to say that this is like his salvation or something. But God did do something in him at this moment.
Right.
Exactly how it works out is really difficult to tell. And like you've mentioned a couple of times, you know, different commentaries handle different things. Or different passages differently, and you know, a lot of people have trouble with this, trying to figure out exactly what God did. But God did do a work in his heart, and the Holy Spirit did come on him, at least at this time.
Yeah, well, I think Saul's trying to figure it out too.
Yeah,
what's going on? So he actually arrives at Jabesh, where he's supposed to go, and prophets meet him, and Saul is prophesizing.
Yeah, yeah, which Samuel said he was going to do. The Spirit of God came on him, and he did prophesy at this point.
Yep. So Saul then talks to his uncle and tells him, "Hey, I found the donkeys," because he's still on the donkeys.
Right.
But that was his big news. Not, "I'm going to be king over Israel."
Yeah. Doesn't even mention it.
Yeah.
Why? I think he's just like, he's still trying to figure this whole thing out. You know, this has been a very eventful day for him. A couple of days.
That's very
you know?
Yeah.
And in fact, what we're going to find is that when people do start finding out that he's going to be king, they're going to be looking around like, he's hiding.
Well, actually,
I mean, this is like, and when we see him again, and I know I'm jumping ahead, but when we see him again, he's king. Where is it? Well, he's still out plowing the fields. I'm like, I don't think he's...
No, he doesn't. It takes him a little bit to get up to speed with the king.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting on how Saul was chosen publicly. God chose him. You know, Samuel knew it.
Yeah.
But then there's a public thing that happens, and it's drawing of lots, right?
Yeah.
So they call the nation together, and it's not like the whole nation comes.
No, this is where your elders come from, the tribe, right? Yeah, you know, when it talks about the elders of Israel, you got your leaders from the tribes, and then the leaders from the clans, and then it works down.
So you got the 13 tribes, and now we're choosing by lots, and Benjamin wins.
Yeah.
Right? So now everybody's now, off.
In case, I'm just going to say this for the benefit of those watching and listening. In case anybody says, hold on a second, you misspoke. You said 13 tribes. But.
Go ahead.
Well.
I was screwed up.
Joseph is split into two.
A mess.
Right? Manasseh and Ephraim.
Yeah, that's
right. Manasseh and Ephraim. So there are 12 if you include Joseph, but Joseph has two. So most lists throughout the scriptures, most lists list only 12, but there's always one left out. So yeah, there's no correction here. 13 is correct. You got.
It sounds weird though, right?
It does sound weird. It sounds awful, but
but it's also right. Explaining. But half the times I do say 12.
But just in case anybody's paying attention, you're like, oh, he didn't correct it. No, there's no correction because there are 13 actual different tribes because two came from Joseph.
Okay, I love the comment, just in case you're paying attention. Okay. All right, so
we're forecasting a lot.
Yeah, they have a couple more. They have a couple more, and they finally get down to Saul's family.
Right, so you get to Benjamin, and then you do the clans, and then you do the individual, and all of a sudden, like, Saul.
Right, so now Saul's chosen.
Yeah.
And that, this is where everybody's looking around. Where is he?
Where is he?
He's like in the back room hiding. So they brought him out and made him king.
Yeah. And it's cool because they didn't, remember, they did not want Samuel's sons taking over.
Right.
Right. So it could be very easy for Samuel to say, well, I've picked Saul or God picked Saul. You know, they're like, come on. You know,
There had to be Saul. A public.
So this was very clearly not Samuel's pick.
Right.
This is God's pick, God's anointed one.
Right. Interestingly enough, Samuel then said, this is how it's going to work.
Yeah.
And he wrote down the rules.
Yeah, which I think I would love to know what he wrote down. I would love to know. Now, all the way back in Deuteronomy 17, Moses is still alive, Joshua is still alive, they have not gone into the land yet. God told through Moses, God said, at some point you're going to get into the land and you're going to say, we want a king. No, we won't. Bear with me. You're going to say, we want a king. And I'm going to tell you, here are the rules for your king. This was hundreds of years, like 400 years ago.
Yeah. And he gave rules?
And he gave rules then. So I imagine, so this is the end of Deuteronomy 17. I imagine Samuel at least included that.
Right.
Maybe other stuff too. But the rules were you're not allowed to multiply wives for yourself. It doesn't say add. It says multiply wives for yourself.
The king?
The king.
Okay.
You're not allowed to multiply, buy horses from Egypt.
Right.
Okay, not allowed to have Egyptian war horses. And so those are your two negatives. The positive then is the king is supposed to take a copy of the law, handwrite his own copy, and then keep that beside him as he rules. So he's literally supposed to know this thing perfectly and keep it as he rules. I don't know of any of the kings who actually did that.
Right. Well, and we really see Solomon not doing that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he definitely multiplied wives and he specifically bought horses from Egypt. Right. Yeah. So, I'm sure Samuel included that stuff. You know, this is what God has already said. But again, I wonder what his, rules for kingship look like or whatever.
All right, I'm just going to keep us going. So I'm going to go to chapter 11. So the Ammonites march onto a town.
Yep.
So now we have the first crisis of the kingdom.
Yep.
And like you said, the guy's still out plowing. So he's not even aware that anything is going on.
100 years ago, 80 years ago, Judge Jephthah has already beat the Ammonites. And so now they're back. And it was about the same location, too. They're back. I don't know. They probably want revenge, something. But now they're back because Israel is just sort of floating around out there. You know, Samuel's about gone. There's no other judges. So what's going on?
Right. So they bring a big army into this town. And the men of the town say, we give up, which seems odd. And then they said, okay, make a treaty. We'll sign it.
Yeah.
We'll serve it. And of course, the guy says some outlandish things. You know, I'm going to gouge every one of your eyes out if you, and that's going to be in the treaty.
Your right eye. You gouge out your right eye because then they can't shoot. No arrows. It actually from
just can't be left-handed.
No, you can't. Right.
All right. So the men said, hey, give us a week. Give us a week to find somebody to deliver us.
Yep.
Which seems odd that they said that, and it also seems odd that the opposing army said, okay.
Okay, yeah. Well, but again, the judges are gone. Samuel's old. He's basically worthless at this point as far as the Ammonites are concerned. Israel barely knows they have a king. Their king barely knows he is a king. Right? You know, so Ammonites probably haven't even heard about this yet.
Yeah,
there's
right.
no central structure. There's no real army. Yeah, there's really nothing.
Really, word probably hasn't even gotten out yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, what are the chances that in a week they're going to be able to come up with an army that could actually defeat them? So I think he's just humoring them, toying with them. He's like, sure, take a week. What do I care? You know, I'm going to beat you anyway.
This is where the narrator says, and they came up with an army in a week. Yeah. So Saul heard about it. The Spirit of God came over him.
Yep.
And like you said, it wasn't necessarily a continuous indwelling, but certainly came over him.
Right. Sort of like Samson, right?
Yeah. And Saul got Israel's attention.
Yeah.
So interesting way that he did it. And it seemed like that wasn't the first time that had happened, where pieces and parts of animals were sent to various places.
Yeah. The last time we read something like that was at the end of Judges, and it was actually a person
that got sent out.
Not animals,
Right. I wasn't going to say that.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah. So Saul actually raised, within a week, an army of 300,000 men.
Yeah.
And they went to the town,
right?
And they struck down the Ammonites in their camp, and the Israelites, you know, renewed the kingship and offered peace to God, and Saul was established, you know, quote, the king. Even though he was the king, the people now recognize.
Now they're like, oh, yeah, we do have a leader now, don't we?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So we get into chapter 12. We now have a king. The king's installed. There's really not anything for Samuel to do anymore.
Nope.
So he retires.
Right.
Yeah. He was a leader, if not the leader, and they wanted a king. Saul did his job, and now he kind of backs out.
Yep.
Right. But he does need to tell Israel one last thing.
He's got to spank him on the way out.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of leaders doing that, but in this case, they deserved it, and they really need that.
Yeah. So he starts out with, look, I've been with you guys since I was a child, right? So he's going all the way back when he was dedicated under Eli, and he says, bring charges against me if you can.
Yeah.
And what he's really saying is, if anybody has anything against me, I'd like to hear it.
Let's clear it up now.
Let's get it on the table. And everybody's like, no.
You've been great.
And he, you know, seems like he did it 3 or 4 times. If I've wronged you, if I've oppressed you, let me know.
Yep.
Okay, everybody's good with what I'm doing here?
Yep. Good.
Yeah.
I have some things to say.
Yeah. He hits him with, y'all might want to sit down for this. Because it's going to take a while. I think he tells him to sit down, doesn't he? Take your position so I may confront you with your actions against the Lord.
That's right.
Yeah. So he goes back to Moses and Aaron and how the nation fell away from God then. And he compares it with Israel wanting to have a king.
Yep.
And he's trying to get them in the same thing. Look, God was leading them, and they didn't even recognize it.
He lists
the exact same thing happened now.
Yep.
Yeah, and he's taking a whole chapter to go through.
I mean, he's just walking through their. They like to do it. They walk through their history.
Yep.
And I love the fact, verse 11. So the Lord sent Jerubbaal, which is Gideon, Barak, Jephthah, and Samuel. He lists himself in the list of judges. He doesn't list Samson, but there's other ones. He's like, God has sent all of these guys, including me, and you haven't listened.
Yeah. But he ends it with, look, if you, the nation of Israel, stay with God, this whole king thing will work.
Yeah.
And if you rebel, there will be issues for you and and the king. And then Samuel asks God to, you know, can you let everybody know, you know, I'm right here. I'm going to ask you to make it thunder and rain. And God did his part. It must have been pretty good because all the people were scared.
That's right.
Which, if somebody says, hey, God, can you make it thunder and rain? And it starts thundering and raining.
Yeah.
You would. And then Samuel says, pray to the Lord and for your sin for asking for a king.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and it ends with, or at least, chapter 12 ends with him repeating, serve God faithfully, everything will be okay.
Right.
And then cue the narrator, everything was not okay. Yeah, okay, so now we're in chapter 13. For whatever reason, you have us going all the way through the end except for the last verse.
I think it fits better with chapter 14. Yeah. We've seen that already once before. Sometimes there are weird chapter breaks, and so Yeah, yeah, that's all.
So
if you want to read the last verse this week, feel free to read the last verse.
Read it twice. So Samuel starts to reign. He's 30 years old.
Saul.
Sorry.
Yep. No, that's all
right. Ah, it's only the first time I did that, right?
Yeah.
Wow. I figured it happened much more than that. Yeah. All right. Saul starts his reign at 30, and he rules for 40 years,
yeah,
which is a good reign.
Yeah, there's some issues with those numbers we're not going to get into. Yep. Feel free to ask if you want to, but there's definitely...
Yeah. Also, if you have a study Bible, just read the notes.
Yeah, there's probably a note or a footnote or something in there that says... There are issues with some of these numbers. Yeah.
But here's my thing with the study Bible, right? All the comments are this long, right? So when you hit a comment that's this long, you know there's there's something that needs to be discussed in there.
Yeah. So he was probably somewhere between 30 and 40 years old when he started his reign, his rule.
Yeah.
And part of that is because his son Jonathan...
How old he was?
Yeah, well, he's old enough to lead an army, lead a garrison anyway.
Right.
So he's got to be at least 20 for that.
Right.
So you've got to...
Yeah, 30 is probably too young.
30 is probably a little young. So, but yeah, something like that. But that's why if you see that in your notes, it's just, we know that. We're not going to spend a ton of time on it, but we don't need to acknowledge it.
Okay, so Saul selects out of the 300,000, 3,000 to stay as an army, and everybody else goes home. Like you said, Saul's son, Jonathan, I wrote down attacks a Philistine outpost.
Yep.
He just kind of shows up there, you know, and it's more, should we attack this? Should we not attack it? And they end up attacking it.
Yeah.
And then the Philistines gather to do battle. So now we have 3,000 men against 3,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and a huge army.
Yeah.
So hopelessly outnumbered.
Yeah, and at the end of the chapter, there's a note about blacksmiths that because the Philistines were occupying Israel and oppressing Israel, they did not let blacksmiths function in Israel.
Right.
So
kind of like the conquering army saying to somebody, you can't have any guns,
right,
or you can't,
right,
you can't make bombs.
So even for their plows and for everything that was had to go to the Philistines to buy it, to sharpen it, to do anything.
There must have been exorbitant prices too. They list the prices.
Yeah. I'm sure it was a premium, I'm sure. Yeah. But what that meant was, you know, we talk about these soldiers here. It says that Saul and Jonathan are the only ones with swords.
Yeah.
So they've got clubs, they've got, you know, slingshots, they've got, you know, whatever. But
against 3,000 chariots.
And against this, they had no chariots.
Right.
This was a big deal. So you can imagine the Israelites feeling overwhelmed, and they think they're, you know, this is obviously they're, you know, if God doesn't do this, we're going to get beat.
Right. So remember, Samuel told Saul to wait 7 days for him.
Yeah.
So Saul stayed for 7 days, but the rest of the army didn't make a pledge.
Right, yeah.
And those 3,000 people seeing everybody, every day the 3,000 army kept getting smaller and smaller, right? People were deserting.
Yeah.
So Saul, you know, he's now the king. He took it upon himself to offer a burnt sacrifice to God.
Yeah.
Because Samuel wasn't there.
Well, so that's the thing. Samuel said, wait for me for 7 days. So Saul waited for 7 days or almost 7 days or something. Right. You know, it was on the seventh day and Samuel wasn't showing up and he's looking at his watch. He's like,
Yeah.
So he does it.
Right. And the repercussions were huge.
Yeah.
So because he overstepped, Samuel said Saul would not have a royal dynasty.
Yeah.
It seems a little harsh, doesn't it?
Well, the thing is, though, is that Saul was, you know, supposed to be ruling, you know, as God's, you know, one commentator says lieutenant or whatever, but basically, you know, he's not a priest. You know, he has no business making offerings. And he had overstepped his bounds. You know, David had problems, too. People, you know, David got a dynasty or whatever. David, in all of his mistakes and all of his sins and all of his everything, David's heart was always protect God's reputation, protect God's name. God, these are your enemies. They're not just my enemies. Protect your name, you know, the whole thing. Saul.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to be
there. Was not about God. Saul was about himself.
Right.
So I think that was the main distinction there. Yeah.
Right. The blacksmith thing, like you said, comes up, and that's really the end of the chapter. Right?
Yeah. He really ends. I mean, we just get started, and he's going to reign for 40 years, but we just get started with Saul, and already Samuel says, This isn't going to work.
Yeah.
This isn't going to work. You don't fear. We'll find out later that Saul feared people instead of fearing God, which is really, that shows us his heart. So, yeah. Right. Yeah. So, a lot of details, some things that we got into on this one, some things we wanted to point out, some connections we needed to make. Hopefully, you found this helpful. But again, we're going to keep coming back to the same principle of obedience to God, not just the action, but also the heart, because that's really what God is looking for, right? So, as you have questions, comments, hey, take a look at some of your footnotes, but feel free to send those our way as well. And subscribe, share this with your family, and we will see you back here next time.
Bye, everybody.